Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a PhD in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. Healthy Alternatives is about looking at what you can do for yourself to reach levels of optimum health. Why do you have to look out for yourself? Well, there was a study that was recently published this summer which found that omega-3s do not help heart patients. Now, that's somewhat of a strange conclusion because there's many, many, many research studies that have been done showing that it does help heart patients. It actually reduces a blood clot within a blood vessel. It lowers blood pressure, lowers triglyceride levels. It can prevent cardiac arrhythmias. So what's going on here that this study came out and seems contrary with everything else? And by the way, it did get media coverage. Well, it turns out the researchers were using margarine, not only margarine, but guinea pig margarine, and feeding that to the people in this study, 4 teaspoons of margarine a day for nearly 3.5 years. Now, the thing about margarine is that it's full of trans fats. Trans fats are the things that can harm your heart. As a matter of fact, the city of New York has banned all trans fats from being in any of the foods is being sold in the city. So, and women in some studies have shown by eating trans fats, they can have a risk of sudden cardiac arrest increase by threefold. So you're looking at a very flawed study out there that got news coverage and says omega fats are useless for helping heart patients. That's why you have to look at healthy alternatives for yourself. Today, I'm going to be talking to my guest looking at the notion of there are connections out there between our culture and the food we eat, and how that's impacting our health, our environment, just about everything we do out there. We'll be exploring this further. If you want to know more about me, you can click on the globe on this page or go to teplitz.com, that's teplitz.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook. In this segment, I look at breakthrough alternatives, things that are out there for us to be able to doing to create a healthy alternative. Last week, I was talking about things you can use as anti-inflammatories. I talked about ginger and I talked about echinacea as anti-inflammatories, and I said this week I would talk about other natural products that you can use for pain relief. One is something called Boswellia. Boswellia can also be called Indian frankincense, and it's a herb that is specific for creating an anti-inflammatory effect in your body. Krill oil is another substance. It's actually an omega-3, and it's been found to actually reduce joint inflammation and promote joint lubrication. Bromelain comes in pineapples, and it's a natural infant anti-inflammatory itself, and you can take it in supplement form or you can eat fresh pineapples. CMO, cytomistolate, if I pronounced it right, this oil is found in fish and dairy butter, and it's a joint lubricant, It's something you can use if you happen to have ganglion cysts or if you're suffering from some carpal tunnel syndrome. You can actually use it as a topical preparation for carpal tunnel. Another one is evening primrose, or it's called black currant or borage oils. All those are essential fatty acids, and they're used to treat arthritis pain. And finally, cayenne cream. That's capsaicin cream. That comes from a dried hot pepper. And it actually, even though it's when you eat it, it's hot, when you put it on your body, it's actually depleting the body's supply of something called substance P, which transmits pain signals to your brain. So it stops that from doing that. So these are healthy alternatives you can look at when you have pain, when you want to take an anti-inflammatory. Before I bring on my guests, I'd like to take a moment for this message.
Anyone who has migraines knows that they are almost totally debilitating and hard, if not impossible, to treat. Or should we say they were impossible to treat? Dr. Jerry Teplitz's DVD, Instant Headache and Migraine Relief, delivers on its promise by showing you a 5-minute migraine cure and a 90-second headache treatment. Learn this natural way to get rid of your migraine with the 2,000-year-old Japanese technique called Shiatsu, a pressure point method that's simple and immediately effective. The Instant Headache and Migraine Relief DVD also offers bonus techniques for treating sore throats, stiff necks, and shoulder pain. Instant Headache and Migraine Relief. No pills, no herbs, no waiting, just relief. Jack Canfield, co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, learned these techniques from Dr. Teplitz and says, "These techniques are so practical, so powerful, so simple. They've done it for me and my family. They can do it for you too." Click on the DVD cover on the page in front of you for more information. Instant Headache and Migraine Relief comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. There's no reason to wait. Click on it now.
So I'd like to introduce you to my guest today, Dr. Will Tuttle. Will has a doctorate degree in education from University of California at Berkeley. He focuses on the philosophy of education. He's taught college courses in creativity, humanities, mythology, religion, philosophy. But besides being an educator, he is also a composer and performer, and he's created 7 CD albums of his own original piano music. And he's also an author. He's the author of the number one Amazon best-selling book, The World Peace Diet, and he's also the recipient of the Pierce Abbey, a Courage of Conscience Award. And so we're going to be talking about the World Peace Diet today, and welcome to Healthy Alternatives, Will.
Thank you, Jerry. It's great to be here.
So can you tell me what your World Peace Diet is not what you'd normally put together as a concept. World Peace, yes. Dieting, yes. What was your motivation for writing this book originally?
Yeah, my motivation actually in writing the World Peace Diet was to make a statement that I felt had never actually been made anywhere by anyone, at least the way I envisioned it, which is that basically our routine mistreatment of animals for food in the culture that we were all born into requires an underlying mentality, way of thinking and way of being towards animals that reduces them to mere commodities, and that mentality of basically a violence towards so many millions of animals has far-reaching and unperceived and undiscussed ramifications, not only for our physical health, but also for our social and cultural health, environmental health, spiritual health, and psychological health. And so I felt someone should just make the case, basically, that killing so many animals for food like we do in our culture undermines everything we long for, undermines our efforts for peace and justice and freedom and equality and joy in our lives.
So what were the triggers for you that got you to originally kind of become aware of this and make this such a focus in your life that you actually wrote a book?
Yeah, the triggers. Well, I think, you know, I was raised in a typical family eating the usual meals, and I never thought much about it. And
a meat and potato kid, huh?
Yeah, I was a total meat and potato kid growing up. Lots of meat, lots of potatoes. My father was proud about how much meat I could eat, and how I could eat a whole steak, you know, in one sitting. And lots of hot dogs, hamburgers, cheeseburgers, you know, everything, bacon. My favorite was hot dog pancakes, you know. So I really never, and as a teenager, I went to a farm up in the summers up in Vermont. We would kill our own chickens and our own cows, and you know, I participated in all that, and it didn't bother me. I knew these animals were put here for us to eat. And so I guess it was, the trigger really was what I feel was a spiritual awakening that happened to me when I was in my early 20s, where I just wanted to let go of pretty much everything, all the programming and my culture, and try to somehow grow spiritually. And I got involved in Zen meditation and in yoga and just the whole spiritual movement in the United States back in the 70s and 80s, or the New Age movement, I guess you'd say. And I became a Zen monk and went to Korea. I lived at some hippie communes before that. And so I was introduced through all of that to a plant-based eating. And I discovered to my, I guess somewhat to my surprise, that one will not die of a protein deficiency if one does not eat meat every day. And in fact, I haven't eaten any meat in over 35 years. And I feel healthier than ever than I did probably when I was back, you know, 20 years old. And I haven't eaten, I've been a vegan for 30 years. So I think for me, the trigger was seeing other people surviving and actually thriving on more plant-based diet, and then the spiritual practices I was doing, and all the I'm very political too, and socially conscious kind of person for some reason. My father was a newspaper publisher, so I was just raised in all that. So I realized it's not just about being healthy, it's about our culture's dilemmas, our culture's crises, the mentality of violence and reductionism and exploitation and privilege and elitism and oppression that is just is required in order to kill so many animals and imprison them and enslave them and mutilate them. You know, that mentality is actually the driving force, I believe, to all of our problems, why we have a hard time actually creating a culture of peace and justice and freedom. So it was really just the example of other people and then looking at the bigger picture.
Let's drill down further in this, Will, in terms of how our food choices are affecting us. And let's look at several different levels. One, let's start with kind of culturally. How would you say our choices are affecting us from a cultural standpoint?
Well, that's a great question, Jerry. I think culturally, it's like many things. Number one, all of us from the pretty much the time we lose our mother's breast and begin to actually get food in our culture, we're forced to participate in rituals, and food is, eating meals is the main ritual of any culture. It's a very powerful ritual. And so we're forced to participate in rituals where we reduce beings to things, where we learn to look at beings as just mere objects to be used. And so it's this mentality of reductionism and commodification. So we create a culture, basically, of might makes right, where the strong use the weak, and they create the laws and create the institutions in order to do that, where women and the feminine dimension is dominated, where beings are mere property. The whole idea of owning other living beings as property is incredibly reductionistic. That subtext of every meal essentially is that some beings are inherently superior to others and can just use them and abuse them however they want. So it just reinforces the whole cultural practice of elitism and privilege, which is rampant in our culture. We have roughly, you know, 0.1% of the people owning the lion's share of all of the capital and wealth and basically making the policies. And so what I've realized is that we, as long as we enslave other living beings, we are planting seeds of slavery in ourselves, and we create a culture where we find ourselves actually enslaved. And most people don't think that they're enslaved, actually, but of course the perfect slaves think they're free, and in many ways we are simply acting out programs that are not in our best interest. We work in jobs and we do things as a culture that are suicidal. We're destroying the environment in so many ways. We're engaging in wars and so forth. So I think culturally it's just massive what we're doing, the repercussions.
Now, have there been any studies that you're aware of done showing difference how kind of a vegetarian or a vegan would react to, you know, life in effect versus somebody who's a meat eater? Is there any, because what you're saying is interesting, but is there any kind of further proof out there?
Right. You know, it's there is actually. There was just actually recently a study that was done where I think it was one of the universities in the Midwest. I can't remember which one it was, but they did a study that basically looked at the way vegetarians and vegans and meat eaters responded to scenes of violence towards other human beings and also towards animals, and they found that the vegans by far responded internally. They actually had them hooked up with the brainwave things machines, and that they responded with much more compassion and empathy than did people who were meat eaters. So it's you know, it raised the question of whether they were more compassionate because they were vegans or whether they were more compassionate people, therefore they became vegans. but they definitely have, you know, sort of hard scientific data that when people who are vegans see suffering towards other humans, they show more empathy than people who are meat eaters who didn't show as much empathy.
Now, I've got a picture of the meat eaters who are listening to this show today, and media question comes up because for transparency, I personally am a vegetarian. I still eat dairy, but I've been a vegetarian since 1971 personally. How do you respond when a meat eater says, my God, how am I going to get my protein? I'm going to die without it.
You know, it's similar to someone saying, how am I going to get my calcium if I don't have dairy? It's basically a cultural, you know, there's really been no studies that have been ever done that say that we need to eat dairy products to get enough calcium, and there's never been any studies done that say that we need to eat animal foods in order to get enough protein. In fact, just the opposite has been shown to be true in scientific studies, that dairy actually reduces calcium levels and causes more osteoporosis, and animal protein actually is very harmful, especially the large amounts that we're eating. And scientific studies continually show this to be true, but we are bombarded by very powerful interests. If you keep repeating a lie long enough, people will believe it. You repeat anything enough, people will believe it. People think that they need animal protein to be healthy. That's what I thought, too, you know, and I realized that actually the most healthy diet for any human being is a low protein, high carbohydrate, you know, complex carbohydrate diet. That it's the complex carbohydrates that give us our energy, and protein always has an extra either nitrogen or sulfur added into the carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen in the molecules, and so that when our body breaks that down, it creates acid. And so the more protein, especially animal protein, has even is more acid-forming than plant protein. So it actually acidifies our tissues and our blood and is really one of the main underlying causative factors for cancer and many other diseases that people are having, arthritis and osteoporosis and obesity. A lot of things come from eating excess animal protein. So it's just very interesting to me that people think they're not getting enough protein if they don't eat meat, and it's the very thing that's basically putting people into the hospital.
So before we continue talking to Will, what I'd like to remind you is that you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net, and we'll be back to Dr. Will Tuttle in just a moment.
Stress is all around us. Stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, foreclosures, and the inability to retire are only a few of the stressful realities of our lives. Times are just difficult. Even if none of these calamities is affecting you personally, we all know people who are in precarious or difficult situations. You can even get stressed just watching the news. And make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book, Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Dr. Teplitz presents fast, easy, and effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. From a 90-second cure for headaches, to 5-minute relief from a migraine, to a 20-second tapping technique that delivers immediate energy, this fully illustrated book offers hands-on, proven methods to immediately manage your stress. In Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change, Dr. Teplitz cuts to the chase. From the very beginning of this excellent book, he begins working with us. Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page right in front of you and buy it now or go to Teplitz.com. Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. It will change your life.
So we're listening to Dr. Will Tuttle, and Will has an interesting background of, a doctorate degree in education from University of California in Berkeley, where he focused in on the philosophy of education. He's taught college courses in creativity, humanities, mythology, religion, philosophy, but he's also a composer and performer. He's created 7 CD albums of his own original music, and he's also author of the #1 Amazon bestseller, The World Peace Diet, and is a recipient of the Peace Abbey Courage of Conscience Award. And you can learn more about Will at willtuttle, T-U-T-T-L-E .com. So Will, before we took our break, you were talking about the healthiest diet, and one of the things that you mentioned were complex carbohydrates. And one of the things I think people miss is when you're talking about complex carbohydrates, you're talking about whole wheat flour, you're talking about things that you're getting in their state before you do a lot of processing to them. Because you're a vegan, what would your kind of typical day look like in terms of meal choices for you?
Yeah, we actually only buy organically grown produce, fruits, vegetables, and grains, nuts and seeds, and so forth. And we eat very little processed food. We buy hardly anything that's in a can or a jar, maybe a few things, but very little. So our morning meal for us, with Madeline, my wonderful wife from Switzerland, and I, she's a really wonderful food preparer. We usually have a smoothie in the morning, which for us is a green smoothie, and that means fruits and vegetables in season, and kale or some other greens mixed in, plus flax seeds that are ground up in a coffee grinder for the omega-3s. And usually she puts in some herbs and different things. I don't even know half the things. She puts in kelp.
You're the guy in the house, huh?
I kind of like, she says, drink this, and I drink it, and it's great. It really gives us a huge energy boost until lunchtime. When she's in Switzerland every summer, I make it myself, and it's probably a little simpler, but basically it's fruits and veggies, and greens, basically, and maybe some almonds and hazelnuts and things like that, and cinnamon. And then for lunch, basically we have a salad, lots of raw, all kinds of vegetables, you know, whatever. I mean, lettuce, sprouts, greens, peppers and tomatoes and green onions. And then we quite often have some kind of protein-type thing, like either walnuts or tempeh bacon. It's called fake and bacon. It's organic, and it's really good. And then that'll usually be wrapped up in a tortilla, like a wrap. And then for supper, we usually have some kind of a more cooked meal of rice or corn or millet or couscous or quinoa or pastas with vegetables and a small salad, and maybe some tofu or tempeh, maybe some avocado or something like that with it, or the avocado maybe more for lunch. But we have a huge variety. That's the thing. Our meals are quite a bit. It's quite a lot of variety. Madeline's a real. She loves to cook and prepare food, so I'm very fortunate in that regard. But We always feel like we're eating like royalty whenever we have a meal.
Great. By the way, for our listeners to be aware, there's different kinds of vegetarians. There are vegetarians who would be a what's called an ovo-vegetarian who would eat eggs. There's a lacto-vegetarian who eats dairy. There's the vegan who is not eating eggs or dairy. And then there are folks who are eating raw, so everything is uncooked. And that's actually becoming more of a trend out there nowadays. And then there are the folks who view themselves as primarily vegetarian, but they occasionally eat meat or fish. So they're a sometimo vegetarian.
Vegetarian, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, just to give you a picture that there are actually different types and different philosophies attached to being a vegetarian. Let me ask you a question, Will, in terms of what would you say the main message of the book is, The World Peace Diet, that went number one on Amazon?
Well, it's really the message of veganism. You mentioned vegans as a subgroup of vegetarians, and that's true. The thing is, for veganism, for vegans, there's really a specific motivation. Whereas for vegetarians in general, there is not a specific motivation. That someone can be a vegetarian because they want to be healthier or because it's less expensive or because it's the trend or whatever. But for vegans, there is one motivation, and that because the fellow who coined the word vegan is a guy named Donald Watson. He just passed away recently, but in 1944, he coined the word vegan. And he said, veganism is a philosophy and way of life which seeks to exclude, as far as possible and practical, all forms of cruelty to and exploitation of animals for food, clothing, or any other purpose. So the World Peace Diet is basically promoting, I would say, a vegan understanding and a vegan evolution or benevolent revolution, because it's based on the ancient idea of ahimsa or nonviolence, which is that we will never be happy as long as we're violent or abusive or see others as instruments to be used for our own gain. And so what veganism is actually a new word for an ancient wisdom tradition, which is to live life as kindly as possible. So vegans, not only like myself, I not only don't eat any animal foods, I would never go to a circus or a rodeo, I would never wear leather or silk or wool or down or pay for things that are tested on animals. And so it means to do the best I can to minimize the amount of violence. And so that's the main message, is that as our culture awakens and we move toward a more vegan way of living, both in food and in all of our actions, we will lay the foundation for a culture where peace and sustainability are actually possible. The basic idea is that we cannot build a tower of love and light with bricks of abuse and cruelty, and that tower is our own physical being. That tower is our own life as a human being. That if we want to build a life, if we want to let our light shine in the world, then we should build a tower of kindness, peace, joy, and love. And that means living as best we can a cruelty-free way, and that means living a vegan lifestyle.
Now, I know there's research out there on Seventh-day Adventists looking at, because they are vegetarian, they're not vegan per se, but they're vegetarian and they're eating nuts and they're also exercising and not smoking, and they're doing a whole range of things like that, and that their longevity is about, I recollect it, 7 to 10 years longer than the average American. And they're also healthier and don't have as many illnesses. Any research out there on folks who have just gone looking at the vegan notion of this, which is taking what the Seventh-day Adventists are doing and moving it, you know, one step further?
Right. Actually, there's all the research that's been done basically shows that people who eat a vegetarian diet, eat less meat, are healthier overall. Vegans, there has been less studies done on vegans per se. I think there have been, Michael Clapper's been doing an ongoing study, and there's a few other people doing them. It's just not, for some reason, a very popular thing to study. I think maybe they're afraid of what they'll find. But But basically,
well, it could also be funding. You know, it's like you're not going to get drug company give you money to prove a vegan keeps you healthier.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think nobody wants to fund something where they're going to find out that they shouldn't be eating the way everybody does. But the American Dietetic Association, which is an extremely conservative, you know, association, does have an official policy statement that vegan diets are appropriate for all stages of life, for pregnant women, for infants, neonates, for children, for adults, and for old people, that you can get all of the nutrients that you need, that anyone can get all the nutrients that they need on a vegan diet, on a plant-based, 100% plant-based diet. They need to perhaps be aware of what they're doing, but it's possible. And they also go on to say that people who do that very often have lower risks for many of the diseases that most people are facing. I found, in my own experience, my mother and my wife's mother are both, my wife's mother's in her 90s and my mother's in her 80s, and since they've been vegan about 15 years, they've had a lot of improvements in their health. So we see this all the time, you know, this the famous thing recently of Bill Clinton going pretty much vegan, is bringing it, I think, somewhat more into the spotlight when you have celebrities going vegan because of wanting to reduce their risk of cancer and heart disease and kidney disease and diabetes and so forth. So
Bill wasn't really concerned about animal health. He was concerned about personal health.
Exactly. So he's not really a vegan. He's actually doing it more for himself, for his own health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, how does somebody ease into it? Because I assume you wouldn't recommend somebody tomorrow goes from being a meat eater to being a vegan. That's maybe too much of a jump in.
Actually, that's a good question. I would recommend if someone makes the connections and understands this, I would recommend that they just go home, throw it all out, and become a vegan overnight. I think that's probably the best way to do it because sometimes when you do it slowly, it's more difficult. So I think the best way is, like giving up cigarettes, just stop smoking. You know, it's just the best way. Just stop it. But some people, and a lot of people I've met actually have done that, but I think most people do it more gradually in the typical two-step. You know, they would give up eating meat first, and maybe sometimes it takes a few steps to give up maybe red meat, and then maybe give up chicken, and then maybe finally give up fish. Then they're doing the dairy and the eggs, and they give up the eggs, and finally they give up the dairy, and maybe finally give up the cheese. That's usually the hardest one because it's pretty addictive. But some people, do it that way. I think probably most people do it that way. That was how I did it. I gave up meat, and then 5 years later, gave up the dairy and eggs. But I think
That's how I did it also, becoming vegetarian myself.
Kind of stages. But yeah. I've seen people do very well, actually, just making the leap. And then what happens very often then is a cleansing. The fruits and vegetables will start cleaning you out. And that can be difficult, because people start cleaning out old stuff. But if they can just go through the cleansing, a lot of people do a really good job of it if they do a fast of some kind. And then when they break their fast, they come back on just fruits and vegetables. And then that's a great way to do it, actually. If you're eating meat and dairy, whatever, just go on a fast. And then when you break the fast, come back without meat and dairy, and you'll be on your way.
Terrific. We've been talking today to Dr. Will Tuttle. He's the author of the book, The World Peace Diet. If you like, you can order it on Amazon. And if you want more information about Will, because he does do speaking to all kinds of groups around the country and concerts, since he is a composer-musician, you can go to Will Tuttle, TUTTLE.com. And Will, thank you for being a guest and sharing your information today on healthy alternatives.
Yes, Jerry. Thanks for the great work you're doing. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. My guest next week is going to be Jeff Davidson. He is an expert in work-life balance. He's written the book Breathing Spaces, Living and Working at a Comfortable Pace in a Speeded-Up Society. We're going to be looking at what's happening out there with downsizing and more things being given to you to do every day, emails, whatever. What can you do to really maintain a work-life balance for yourself? We'll get you some real tools that you can use. You don't want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening. My guest next week is going to be Jeff Davidson. He is an expert in work-life balance. He's written the book Breathing Spaces, Living and Working at a Comfortable Pace in a Speeded Up Society. We're going to be looking at what's happening out there with downsizing and more things being given to you to do every day, emails, whatever. What can you do to really maintain a work-life balance for yourself? We'll get you some real tools that you can use. You don't want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.